This is a Pinball News production.
Well, thank you, everybody. I appreciate you coming up. I think you'll find this talk perhaps a little... Well, I hope you'll find a little more interesting than the topic suggests, because I'll take you on a little journey about bumper action, and it really entails pinball and what it's all about. The first thing you need to know is that Australia is very much a junior America. In the 70s, we had thousands of pinball machines. The perception is perhaps that this is an isolated country where, you know, not much happens other than kangaroos. Not true. There's major cities there, reasonably large populations, because of our 10 cities, each of those has, you know, quite a few million people in them now. In the 70s, much like in America, and the 60s, most of us grew up with pinball machines. As a child, my parents had a toy shop that was very close to a bowling alley, so from a very early age, I was introduced to pinball. And if you have a look around at these seminars, most of us are at least 35, 40, because we were all born up with pinball, something that doesn't happen now. In 1974, I think, 74, 75, I bought my first pinball machine at 9 years of age. I had an inheritance from a grandmother that died, and all I wanted was a pinball, and I nagged my parents to where they couldn't take it anymore, and they bought me a pinball machine. The place I bought it from was a new business starting up called Bumper Action Amusements. So there's a 30-year romantic connection there. So I bought it as a child. Maybe a year later, somebody else died, some more money came in. I bought a second pinball machine from Bumper Action. Now, it was quite cute because he took a lot of time with me, because I think he was amused that a child would be interested in a pinball machine. You know, it just doesn't happen. There was no collectors in those days. So by the time I was 12, I had five of these things. The garage was full. My parents couldn't park there anymore. And kids that used to beat me up at school were suddenly friends, because they could come over. And this bizarre guy had all these pinball machines in his office. Anyway, so from that, I forged a career. I went through university. The hobby built up. I was repairing machines. And eventually, I started my own business called Amusement World. We ran about 100 machines in the mid-80s. And a lot of those were pinballs. Pinballs were dead in the mid-80s, but because of my romantic connection, I always wanted to run pinball machines. So we put them out there, regardless of what they earned, just to keep the hobby alive. Anyway, all this boils up to coming back to Bumper Action. I then went into management and worked in other jobs, and none of them interested me, and I always wanted to get back into pinball, but I didn't want to run my own business anymore. So I went to Bumper Action Amusements, which I'll just show you. Oh, there's my wife. No, it's not. I don't know how that got in there. Here is Bumper Action and what it looks like today, because part of the entertainment is I'm going to tell you what Bumper Action was like when I first went back there. Bumper Action today is probably the highest profile and largest amusement company retailing in Australia today. There are three major companies. One is us. We're all national. We all come from Melbourne. We're all within an hour of each other. The second one would be Child Amusements, and I understand Mark is here as well. The third company is Wayne. So the three of us compete. Bumper Action today has the highest profile because of what we did. If you have a look inside, it's quite beautiful. It differs from other places where you can buy a machine, because we've tried to make it look as homely as possible. We've got neons and pictures all over the walls. We've got tons of pins. That's a downstairs showroom. There is an upstairs one as well. And we put everything that might be fun for the home in there. Soccer tables, air hockey tables, novelties, what have you. Anything to make it entertaining. When I decided to go back to Bumper Action, which was just around 9 years ago, I walked in there and really, I only wanted a part-time job. I knew he had a lot of electromechanicals upstairs. Very few people in Australia can repair electromechanicals. And I asked if I could perhaps have a job doing some restoration upstairs. I was surprised when he said to me, "Look, Dave, I'd like you to be the operations manager, day one." And I didn't know why, but I thought, yeah, all right, I'll take it on. When I arrived at Bumper Action, the golden days were gone. We were now at 1999, pinball had dried up, operators had died. Bumper Action was dying. The two largest companies at the time were Leisure and Allied Industries, which were national. They had won a ridiculous amount of awards from Williams, if I'm not correct, for their overseas importation. They had imported hundreds of Williams pinball machines, probably thousands over the 90s. They'd gone under because there was no money left. They're still around, but they're no longer running retail stores. Hankin was the second largest, also national. They'd also gone under. They think they run one or two arcades, but they're no longer in distribution. They're no longer retailing. Bumper Action was on the next rung down. It was a medium-sized business. When I arrived to take over operations there, the place did not look like that. The first day I went out with a guy collecting the money, he took a bunch of money from one of the machines and said, come on, let's buy lunch. And I said, what with that? He said, what, are you going to knock it back? So we had collectors that were taking money out of operations all over the place. We had a driver that had not shown up for work for a week because he'd been sent to pick up $3,000 for a Wurlitzer machine that had been sold, had taken it to the casino, put it all on red, and lost. The idea was sound. You see, if he'd won, he would have come back, handed back the $3,000, and no one would have known. And for all we know, perhaps he'd done that a few times. The spare parts girl at the time, I needed some bits for my machines at home, said, help yourself. And when I went to pay, she said, don't worry about that. So the place had turned into disarray. The owner, who you'll see in a minute, there's an interesting story there. The owner's name is Delano Rice. He's the original owner. Full name, Francis Delano Rice. Father's name, Francis Delano Rice, related to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Francis Delano Rice was born into affluence. His father owned enormous mills in Malta, where they made great money. Del was sent to the best boarding schools in London. He spent years at Gordonston with Prince Charles. So it's an interesting background to come into amusements. He bummed around as a young man, found his way into Australia, picked up a pinball machine, realised he could sell it for more than he bought it for, and started Bumper Action Amusements from there. Anyway, so the story goes that after a week I wanted to resign. It was not my cup of tea, the place. It was struggling for money. In fact, a couple of them said, you'd be lucky if you're here for a year anyway. You shut the doors, there's nothing happening. So the amusement industry was all but dead and buried in Australia. There was no sign that it was going to come back. And this is a classic example for Stern too, because operators are slowly diminishing. There's too many other products out there to take your money. Gambling is an all-time high. The dollar is not great. Expenditure and cost of living is up. Anyway, he convinced me to stay, and we cleared the place out. We changed staff. We removed people that needed to be removed. We brought good people in, and then we figured out what the hell we were going to do to try and make money. The only possibility was home marketing, because most of us, particularly young men, have always had an affection to own a pinball machine, but most people do not know, other than enthusiasts, that you can buy these things. People don't realise that you can actually go and have, a lot of people today still don't know. We get phone calls saying, can you actually buy these things for home? They have no idea that you can buy them. First thing we did, because sales, I'll tell you how quiet the place was. We started a bonus incentive to see if we could bring in from all departments, spare parts, party hire, sales, $7,000 for the week. If we got to $7,000, we got a bonus. So that's how quiet things were. And this was a company that had like a staff of about 8. So you can imagine that wouldn't even pay for wages. And Del was putting in a lot of his own money just to keep the thing going. First thing we decided of was public advertising for an auction, because by having an auction and putting it in the major newspapers, you had a chance for people to realise that they'd actually buy them. So rather than doing reactive advertising, which is just you put an ad in under a pinball section that says pinballs for sale, where somebody's already looking for a pinball goes there, we thought we'd target people that never thought you could possibly have a pinball machine. So we took a big gamble, spent a lot of money, and advertised in the national paper, similar to USA Today, but nowhere near as expensive to advertise. We put big ads in there. We had an auction. We didn't know how many people would turn up. Hundreds turned up. Hundreds of people turned up. They couldn't get into the doors. They were packed out. We netted in that auction, and the following 4 days, because people that missed out came back, $350,000. It was beyond our wildest dreams. Everything in the place sold. Everything. There was nothing left. It was a couple of little bits and pieces that were cleaned up later. It gave us the capital to completely change the place. It also put on the map for anyone else that was still out there struggling that there was an option to be successful other than the usual route, which is operation and people's stores. You could actually sell direct to the public. We had another auction. Sales filtered off from there. More and more people rang up and said, oh, have you got anything left? And business was good. We had another auction about 6 months later. At the time, Wayne was around, the infamous Wayne, rang me up because I'd known him for 20 years. I had the honour of being the person that sold Wayne his first pinball machine. I've got some blame. He bought a Henken Empire Strikes Back off us a long time ago. Anyway, Wayne rang me up and said, oh, when are you having your next auction? And I told him, which I shouldn't have. I'll have to watch my accent here because you've got to get this. We are Bumper Action Amusements. We were having an auction. All of a sudden, the owner pulled me in and said, what the have you done? There was ads there from Wayne, and it said, a bumper auction at my place. Our auction was an unmitigated disaster because everyone went there thinking they were at Bumper Action. So there are pros and cons to having an auction. He rang us up and said, oh, you'll never guess how many people came here thinking they were at your place. So anyway, that put us back. But nonetheless, we then thought, well, if this is going to work, let's do some saturation advertising and marketing. We then approached TV stations, newspapers, publications, radio, because we had a product that was interesting. If we'd sold tables and chairs, no one would have been interested. The fact that there's a romantic nostalgia to pinball machines actually got all these people coming for nothing. We got on travel shows. We got on the national news. There's so many different places we got onto and programs purely because we sold pinball machines. And every time we did, in they came and the phone started running hot. So it perpetuated. As more money came in, more advertising was spent and more people from the general public bought. One thing about pinball machines is that in a home market, they start to sell themselves because as soon as you put a pinball machine in someone's house and their buddy comes over, hey, that's great, I wouldn't mind one of those, and they buy one. So Bumper Action very quickly changed everything from image to perception to national identity. It's an example of spare parts, and upstairs you'll see a whole ton of beautiful 60s and 70s pinball machines that are now all gone. The market demands 90s pinballs. We sell some 70s pinballs. Sadly, early 60s pinballs are very hard to move. Those that really want early 60s pinballs are not willing to spend very much money on them. The demand? It's almost totally for 90s pinball machines. Alphanumeric's okay as well. Then you've got your core group that loves a late 70s pinball machine, and you've got a very, very small group of collectors that want early 60s pinball machines. Rarity dictates value, and if you get a beautiful early 60s pinball, there's almost nobody that wants it that's willing to spend the appropriate money on them. 90s pinballs, however, are ideal because they're quite reliable as well. When you sell a solid-state pinball, you've got 30-year-old boards in them, and you've almost certainly got a service call or three to make very quickly after. And they're not around, you know, most of these things. And it's sadly, particularly the 70s electromechanicals, a lot of them were just junked, you know. When nobody wanted them, they went to the tip. It's really sad. And the other sad thing about pinball is in the late 70s and early 80s, you could pick them up for a couple of $100. And what that meant was families would buy them. When the kids were finished with them, out in the backyard they went to get rained on. You know, there wasn't any perceived value of them. Whereas today, pinballs are far more expensive and they're beautifully maintained and we're all getting far more knowledgeable in what we do. So the auctions are one way we did it. Another thing we suggested was, what about we have an old-fashioned pinball parlour? We long lamented down there about how you couldn't go and play pinball anymore, and this is a worldwide phenomenon. You know, the arcades have closed. People would come in and say, where can I play this pinball? I want to play pinball. And the answer was nowhere. We went to the owner and suggested, why don't we have a monthly pinball meet where everyone that loves pinball could come after work, we'd put all the pennies on, we'd have beer and pizza and soft drinks for the kids, and it'd be a great way to introduce people to pinball and let them know there's somewhere fun. Pinball Faith was born about a week later. First it was knocked back on the head. The boss said, what are we going to do that for? You'll ruin all the machines. They'll all be filthy when you want to sell them. About a week later, we had a meeting, and he turned around and said, listen, guys, I've got a great idea. I think we'll start an old-fashioned pinball parlour. Great. So we got it going. Pinball Faith started as a boys' night only. It was beer and pizza and serious players. Then somebody rang up and said, you can't sell beer. Even though we weren't selling it, we were giving it away. We were charging it admission. It was the best thing that ever happened because the beer was cut out and the soft drinks came in. What happened then was children started pouring in. Families brought their kids. Pinball Faith now has a capacity for probably 100, 120 people on a given night, and probably half of those are kids, which is a fantastic thing to do. Now, Mike does the same thing with Church of the Silver Ball. This is the only way you'll get pinball continuing in 20 years' time because we're all 40 plus now. And kids are not introduced to it. When they come to Pinball Faith, you just see how much they enjoy it. You put the little stands there, they're fascinated by the game, and that's how we all got started. It's like smoking. None of us start smoking at 30. We all start playing pinball and smoking when we're kids. And sooner or later, 40 will be 60, 60 will be 80, and the next generation that are only brought up in home consoles will be the death of pinball. My point is basically that home marketing saved pinball in Australia, whereas if we'd just been left to operation, that would have been the end of it. Stern realises that. You can see that they're tailoring it more that way now, and you can see their figures have gone up from where they declared 10% of sales were going to home to 20%. Now the figure is bandied around half. I can tell you in Australia, because we distribute for Stern, that about 90 to 95% of all new Stern pinballs are sold to home. There's very few operators, and they'll buy one here and one there. Bars do well with pinball, not much else. We've actually found that children's centres do very well for pinball. A little untapped market there. You put it in a kids' centre, dad's bored, he'll play it, and the kids will hammer and play it. It's a good little market for pinball. Anyway, if I just move along here. Here's an example of a pinball faith night. These are early pictures. What we do with the pinball faith is whenever a new Stern comes out, we also have the national introduction day for Stern, and we'll tailor the pinball faith night accordingly. If you have a look down the bottom there, there's a very happy young David with three Playboy bunnies when we introduced Playboy 2002. Here's Pirates of the Caribbean theme night where everybody got dressed up. If you dressed up, you got in for free. So it was a really nice promotion. We can tell how many Stern pinballs we can sell by the title. One thing that Gary Stern does very well is licensing. We've known that for 30 years. You know, Bally proved that. But particularly for home marketing, if you haven't got a license, you won't sell a pinball. We knew when Wheel of Fortune was bought out that we wouldn't sell any. It was immediately evident because it had no license value. At home, nobody's going to say, wow, check out my Wheel of Fortune pinball. But if you put Pirates of the Caribbean or you put Simpsons on it or you put Batman on it, we know we're going to sell tons. People ring up. It's sad, but it's true. Elvis, it didn't matter if that play field was bare. We knew we'd sell plenty of them because an Elvis fanatic is an Elvis fanatic and they'll buy it. It's totally changed. I haven't got any new pictures, but if you have a look today, it's like a kids' party in there. It's really nice because there's plenty of children. Rawdon Osborne, who is another Aussie that's here at the moment. Another thing we introduced was seminars to Pinball Faith. We would stop halfway through the night and we'd have a special guest every day. Rawdon here was teaching people pinball repair. When Wayne first began and we thought maybe something would happen, we had Wayne over, and Wayne brought over a whole lot of Bally Williams parts that he was going to reproduce and showed us sketches of Crocodile Hunter, which we know now will never be produced. But we had one of the guys that ran Leisure and Allied Industries who talked about how they went from like 80 amusement parlours down to nothing and just wiped out literally overnight when the industry failed. So we bring in interesting things and anything we can do to try and help people and educate people and keep the thing going. For me, I do work there in sales, but I don't like salespeople, and my sole mission is to keep the place alive. Anything I can do to generate income and generate pinballs that keeps the industry going is all I'm interested in. Bumper action is a means to the end. It's to most of us. We've all got collections in there. One of the reasons we probably do quite well is because we love it as well. So we, you know, I get told off for talking to a customer for 2 hours because we just get talking about pinball history and all sorts of things. So it's a wonderful avenue to try and keep the place going. And it has taught us a lesson on how pinball can survive very well through home sales. We've thrived without, we don't operate anymore. We don't need operation. There is plenty of sales and it's untapped. Okay, here's Kiss signing a back glass for us. And of course, you know what a signature does to a pinball machine. If you can market that as we do, you can get some huge figures. One of the things I want to just show you is some of the financial figures we've achieved through marketing and perpetuating a myth on what pinballs are worth and how collectible. We spend a lot of time letting people know the investment possibility of pinball, and it's quite true. If you buy a computer or you buy a home game system, it's worth nothing in 3 years. If you buy a pinball machine, there's every chance that it may be worth more than you've paid for as stocks diminish. Some of the prices we have achieved. Monster Bash, $9,000. Indiana Jones, the original Indiana, not the new one. The original one, we don't sell for less than $7,200. Now, I'll just clarify that. The Australian dollar, as far as cost of living, is very similar to the American. If you pay $3 for a burger here, you pay $3 for a burger in Australia. It's pretty well on par. The petrol's slightly cheaper here, but it's not. These figures you can relate to. It's not that it's in a foreign country, therefore it may not mean the same. It does. Collectability is everything. Playboy 2002, we've sold four of those for $8,500 each. This was not a successful pinball machine. In fact, as far as operating, it was a disaster because bars didn't want them in Australia. There's too many ladies that now frequent the bars and they, a fear of offending, they would not have a Playboy 2002 in there. At the time, you could not sell one to operators. So we held on for a little bit, and as I said, we sold four of them for $8,500. Simpsons Pinball Party, wow, that is popular. Simpsons Pinball Party, a regular Stearns is still expensive in Australia. It sells for $7,500, whereas here it's probably about $4,200. So it's already expensive because of the change up in the dollar and the shipping and the fact that it goes through about three different distributors before we get to it. So the price is set quite high. If you hold on to them till there are none left, then you ask your price. We've sold five Simpsons at $10,000. We've sold one Simpsons Pinball Party for $11,000. We had a Kiss in an auction, not that one. It was not signed. This was just a straight out Kiss. Three people turned up to the auction. None of them were going to walk out without it. It ended up selling for $11,200. Our reserve was probably a couple of $1,000. The guy that bought it came up later and said, I know I paid too much for it, but I was going to have it. And then we come to the two top end ones. Cactus Canyon. $15,000, sold about 3 weeks ago. Cactus Canyon is a nice pinball. It's not as good as Medieval Madness. It's a nice pinball, but rarity and perception dictates price. We put it up there at $15,000 as an ambit figure, and it sold within a week. There is another one on Australian eBay right now at $15,000. The highest price we got, and bear in mind, these are standard pinballs. Obviously, if you've got an Aaron Spelling, you could ask your price. These are standard pinballs. The highest price we ever received was from an Elvis Gold. We got several Elvis Golds bought in the country, but not a lot. The last one we had sold for $16,000. So there's people out there that will pay anything for a pinball if they want it. Lorena. Lorena was a very dicey thing. It was decided, what if we get a model in there for the publications? The owner knew a lady that had a beautiful daughter that was coming into modelling, and it suggested perhaps we get Lorena to model with the pinball machines to help promoting it, because cars do it, automobile companies, you know, you see models in front of things. We did it and we divided it because we'd become a very family-orientated business, and people rang up and said, we don't appreciate having a half-naked girl on your website and in the promotions. Well, Lorena is still there because a lot of people like her, but it's if you're selling to the home, it's touchy whether you put a model on or not. This is a ridiculous photo. This is Tim. We have a permanent IT guy. One thing about marketing today is it's all internet. We have, and have had for years now, a full-time guy that does nothing but IT. He works on our website. He's currently doing a new one. He does anything to do with electronics, computers, and the internet goes through Tim. He would not put this presentation together for me unless I put his photo up. So there's Tim. Okay. Now, here's just some interesting facts and figures for you. Bumper Action's bestsellers. I thought you might be interested in what actually are the best-selling pinball machines that we have, which are the ones that you can put on the floor and it sells for straight away. I've put this into two categories, prior to the 90s and 90s pinballs. So if we go before 90s pinballs, the 10th most popular one we've ever sold, and this goes back to even before my time, Harlem Globetrotters. 9 would be Strikes and Spares. The 70s version, Bally. 8 is 8-ball. 7 is Centaur. Centaur is very popular. 6 would be 8-ball Deluxe. 8-ball Deluxes, if you can get one in Australia now, sell for about $5,500. Royal Flush and Card Whiz, just one of those pinballs that people really remember and like. Beautifully designed. Surfer and Surf Champ, you can't get enough of them. You could just about name your price on a surfer. Captain Fantastic, an extraordinary pinball machine. Now, Wizard would be there, except that Australia got virtually no Wizards. So because we've only got Captain Fantastic, the last one we had sold for $5,500. Number 2 is Playboy, the original Playboy. The original Playboy, again, you can't buy enough of. And the number one selling pinball prior to 90s is Kiss. The average price of a Kiss would be between $7,000 and $9,000. A clapped out Kiss you may find for $4,500 to $5,000, but a nice Kiss around that price. Now, if you go to the 90s pinballs, 10th is Harley-Davidson. It sells on its name. People will look at that machine and want it because it says Harley-Davidson. And that's either one, the Bally one or the Seeger. 9th is Indiana Jones. Again, the original Indiana Jones. And even at over $7,000, as soon as they're on the floor, they're sold. Star Wars Data East. And you can see here that branding is everything. Twilight Zone, an amazing pinball machine. Twilight Zone sells on reputation. It's not a huge license as far as name, but because, and bless the internet, the amount of articles and the amount of pinball polls and the amount of interest that people now have in pinball, Twilight Zone is a huge seller. And when we get Twilight Zones, they don't hit the floor. They're up in the workshops and they're sold. Twilight Zones never sell for under $6,000. And generally $6,000 to $6,500. What Twilight Zone also teaches us what Stern could do and that is the amount of money you can make from aftermarket products that are just floating around there now. You know, Stern's got a whole world they could explore in profitability, because if budget won't allow them to put certain things into the machines, if you sold them as an aftermarket product, there ain't one person that wouldn't buy it. If you're going to spend $4,200 on a pinball and you can afford it, you can afford $200 more for some extra characters. It's guaranteed money. Lord of the Rings, a huge pinball machine. And again, if they produce any more, we'll buy everything they've got. Lords were an extraordinarily popular pinball machine for many, many reasons. Visually looks beautiful. Big movie theme, played great, and an outstanding George Gomez design, just beautifully presented. Pirates of the Caribbean, we've sold, now bear in mind these are not huge figures worldwide, but Australia is still not a massive country. We've probably sold 50 pirates from our shop over the time, and each time they do another little run, whatever our allotment is, they're gone. If we had more, we would have sold more. Pirates does what medieval madness did in its time, and it's got something that you smash and it eventually falls apart and sinks, and people love it. Simpsons Pinball Party. Again, huge figures achieved on Simpsons Pinball Party. And an instant seller. Here's an example of a brand that's so universally popular that guys will come and buy it because it's cheeky. Women will come and buy it because they find it fun, just like they do with the Addams Family. It's exactly why Addams was produced in the numbers of 21,000, because Addams Family introduced women to pinball that wouldn't perhaps play Getaway, but they found Addams Family fun and most enjoyable to play. Simpsons does the same thing. It's got complex rules, but it doesn't matter. You can bash a ball around and be entertained all the way through. Fishtails, this is a surprise. Fishtails is one of the fastest selling pinballs we can get. Fishtails, again, you put on the floor, it's sold immediately. Fishtails are a cheaper bracket, so that helps, but a fishtail selling at around about $3,000, there were so many fishtails bought in that it's that old adage that I'd like the pinball that I used to play in the corner. So when you put a fishtails on the floor, bang, it's gone. Now, fishtails does not have a deep set of rules. There's not a lot to keep you going, but by God, they sell. Number two is Getaway. Getaway. And again, there were so many Getaways bought in that they were everywhere, that people love it. It's impressive to have it in the home because you see that ball shooting round and round and round. Strangely enough, Grand Prix has not done that. Grand Prix's got a massive circuit, but it does not have the effect that the smaller Getaway has. It's just an out-and-out fun machine. And Getaway is without question the second most popular pinball we saw in the last 9 years. What do you think the most popular one is? Addams Family. Even if you couldn't get one under $6,000. Addams Family. $6,000. A few years ago they were four. They've been sitting on six for a while now. I can't even fathom, because I couldn't be bothered looking up every possible one we've sold, but I know that the ones I look through, it's just dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of Addams Families that are sold. We've worked very hard to get the other half of the population to come in. You'd like the ladies to come in and want pinball, and when they do, they want Addams. And when they buy it for their husbands, or when they buy it for themselves, or when the blokes buy it, Adam's Family is in a world of its own as far as being popular. So that's the best sellers. Just a short little thing here. These are instant sellers. These are ones that, they may not be best sellers because we plain haven't had enough of them coming through, but they are immediately sold as soon as we can get our hands on them. There's a surprise. Freddy Krueger, when you talk Gottlieb in the 90s, there's not a lot of popular titles. This has only happened in the last couple of years. We used to sell Freddy's for anything we could get. I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden Freddy's will get 3.5 instantly as soon as it's on the floor. You can't get enough Freddy Krueger's in Australia. Corvette, again, it's a hip pin. It's a hip pin. Surprisingly, there's not a lot of Corvettes in Australia, but the Corvette pinball is immediately sold and at $6,000. Actually, I think they're about 5.5 now. Guns N' Roses, stands on its own because it's really the only rock and roll pinball that you can get in the modern era, other than Tommy and Elvis. But really, it's the only rock and roll pinball. It's hugely in demand. And it's a well-designed pinball too. It's classic pinball. Diner. It's very, very popular. If you can get your hands on a Diner, it's sold straight away. Indiana Jones, even though it's in the best sellers, we can't get enough of them. You know, and they sell for $6,000 as well. Theatre of Magic. Here's an example of a pinball that's just so beautiful to look at. It's got everything you want. See, we're talking a different field now. We're not talking operators. If we're talking operators, you talk about the new Indiana Jones. The new Indiana Jones is nice and easy to play and it makes good money out there. Home sales, it's poison. It's compared to the original one. Doesn't seem to have a lot on it. Rules are annoying. It doesn't sell. Theatre of Magic has got the complete package. It's very smooth flowing. It's beautiful in all respects and it looks great. Scared Stiff, another one that sold immediately when they come on the floor. It's fun. It's got humour. Humour plays a big part in sales. If it's quirky and humorous, you've got a much bigger market. Cactus Canyon sells on its reputation. All Playboys sell. Medieval Madness, average price about $10,500 in Australia. It's similar everywhere. It just reached top dollar. It's the freak of all freaks because it has no licensed name. So it stands above all those that the game is so impressive that it doesn't need a license to sell. An Attack from Mars. There are very few Attacks out there. Collectors want them and they can't get their hands on them. You can name your price on Attack. There are others I could put in there as well, like Monster Bash. There's plenty of others, but these are the ones that instantly are requested all the time and just aren't around. The last one is a fun one. The glued to the floors. These are the ones that are the most difficult to sell. See if you can guess any of these. Number 10, Flipper Football, Capcom. Try selling it. All these games, by the way, are not particularly bad games per se. They've all got, every pinball has some redeeming features in it, but try selling it when you've got it next to a World Cup soccer. Lights, Camera, Action. It's an interesting game. There's lots of fun things to do on Lights, Camera, Action, but you can't move it. World Challenge Soccer suffers again because of World Cup soccer. It's just, you know, God help you if you've got a World Cup next to it. Striker Extreme, I don't think is on this list, but is not far behind it in the difficult to sell. Gladiators, again, it's not really a bad machine, but no one wants it. Strange Science, it's an interesting machine. It may not be the worst one. I'm only going on us and how long it took us to move it. AG Soccer, perhaps a little unfair. There's not a lot of them around, but anything that's got two sides, nobody wants. Johnny Mnemonic. Again, it's not a bad pinball, but the film bombed a horrid death, and it's no one wants it. Jackpot. Well, it's interesting when you consider how hugely popular Pinbot was. Here's Jackpot, which is similar, yet it's modern. It's got dot matrix as interaction. Doesn't have the magic of the first one. The machine, Bride of Pinbot's an easy one to sell. That's got a cult following. Machine, no problem. Jackpot, extremely difficult. And they're all like new. Big Guns is not sold the minute somebody plays it, and there's one reason. Because I try to market Big Guns as the precursor of Medieval Madness. You know, we tried anything. We said, this is what Medieval Madness does. It doesn't work. The narrowing of that lane, two-thirds of the way up, kills the pinball instantly. There's some fun things on it, but it's just poison. That little narrowed lane and having little pocket up the top that you hit, there's no fun in it. It's nigh on impossible to sell at any price. Have another guess what the hardest pinball... Now, I will say this. I like this pinball. I own 17 pins in my collection, and this pin's in it. This pin's in it, and I love it to death. It's a good pinball.
Who
No, I've got Safe Cracker, but Gary Flower, right on the money. Who done it? Who done it? Sat on our floor in beautiful condition for more than 2 years. It went through something like 7 or 8 auctions with no reserve and did not receive a bid. It was a laughing point. We'd get to the end of the auction and there'd be 4 pins left and there'd be whodunit. No reserve. Could not move it. It's a great pin. I love it. It's the hardest one to move. And it's in my collection. I think it's fantastic. Did you want to take a photo of that, Larry, before I take it off? I don't want to offend. It's funny you should say that. Popeye, when I first saw Popeye in the arcade, I thought, oh, God, that's the end of it. You know, I thought it was terrible. People love Popeye. It's not 9 out of 10 people wouldn't dare touch it, but there's a percentage of people that love Popeye that'll snap it up, and we get asked for it. Have you got a Popeye? Strange. You know, if whodunit had been called Cluedo, we might not be talking in these terms. And that's the same for a lot of things. Ripley's, believe it or not, was a damn good pinball machine. Again, like Wheel of Fortune. Who wanted Ripley's? If that thing had been called Indiana Jones 4, it would have been a monster. You know, with the temple up the top, you know, interesting things all over the place. It was a great Lawler design. It could also have been called Twilight Zone 2. You could see what he was trying to do on that thing with a limited budget. What's in a name? You know, Ripley's is a very hard pinball to move, and it's a good, fun, entertaining pinball. Just got the wrong title on it. All right, I've got to wrap it up. I wanted to finish off with something that was of interest. What you see there is a burnt-out building. We had a guy in Melbourne that did something that was so special for the pinball community. He was a private collector. He decided to do what we were doing and open up a pinball cafe, which we don't have, which no one has. It wasn't just any old cafe he was opening up, though. This cafe that he opened up had about 30 pins in the back for the general public to play with. The pinballs he had in there for the general public to play were Big Bang Bar, Cactus Canyon, Medieval Madness, Monster Bashes. He gave people the opportunity, the general public, to play pinballs that they would never get a chance to play before because collectors won't let people touch their pins. He spent a fortune 4 days before he had a soft opening, 4 days before he was due to open, the place burnt down. Now, if you have a look, there's a monster there. There's a jackpot. Circus. It's the other room that's got the big ones. There's the front counter. This story will be in Pin Game Journal. It's well worth looking at. It's going to come up in the next couple of publications. You can read all about it. This guy, Wayne Finn, different Wayne, Wayne Finn, one of the nicest blokes you'll ever meet. What he'd done with this centre that he was opening was incredible. Every machine was laser levelled. Everything, you know, the metal work was, what's a word for that special technique they use on the metal to make them beautiful? No, it's electroplated. He'd done everything to present these machines. He had a schedule there, which, you know, the problem with arcades and operators has always been the pins are left in the corner and not maintained. This guy had a schedule where every pinball was stripped down at this amount of time and rebuilt. They were polished daily. Everything was readjusted and levelled daily. You had a rare opportunity for a pinball collector to share his pins. Big Bang Bar. Now, the saving grace, if you'll notice, the pinballs are not destroyed. The saving grace is that the front burnt down. The pinballs did survive to a degree. However, what he found afterwards is the ash, the dust, the soot, everything had gone into everywhere. He had melted plastics, the hyperballs shot. The more he looked, the more he discovered that there was damage to them. You can see there's a cactus next to it. So he wasn't putting in a few cheap pins in there for people to play. There's the front of it. So I just thought I'd finish with that. You can read about it in Pin Game Journal. It's a most interesting story. The other thing about that place is that he had no insurance on the contents, only the building. He put on, if you can believe it, $80,000 worth of carpet in there. It was casino quality, toughened carpet. And sadly, he had something, he told me, like about $200,000 worth of audiovisual equipment in there, state-of-the-art Polk, etc., etc. and it all went to God. He is trying to rebuild it. It was dependent on the insurance payout. It looks like it's only for the building. He is slowly restoring the machines, and hopefully one day we will get a magical place like that reopened. Thank you very much.